Everybody, guess what?
What?
It's episode 169 of Magically Amateuring.
169?
That's right.
No crap.
Nope, no crap at all here on this episode. Only quality A+, grade A magic content.
I was trying to say no kidding, but for some reason my mouth started saying cur and I had to just roll with it.
I get it. Sometimes my mouth like says things and I just can't be held accountable, you know?
I mean, I feel that way all the time.
It's like halfway out my mouth and I'm just like, well, this train's left the station.
Yeah, and I mean, you know what the thing with trains is that they can only go forward.
Yep.
Wait, you're the one who says that trains can only go forward.
Yes, that is a true fact.
Denier of the fact that trains can only go forward. They can go forward and backwards.
Well, you can believe what you want to believe about trains.
Look, when you have two engines, the one when they're hooked back to back.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know what I'm talking about? Right, because when there's two engines powering a train, they're not hooked like nose to tail, they're hooked nose to tail, tail to nose.
I feel like we've gone too deep on this train thing right now.
Is it going forwards or backwards is my point.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, we can never know.
You can never know. Trains, an eternal mystery.
Yep.
To the members of Magic the Amateuring.
Did you have a train obsession as a child, as many children do?
At first I thought you were going to ask if I had a train of thought that I had started before we started this train tangent. The answer to both questions is no.
Got it. What was your toy obsession as a child?
I collected Briar horses.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the model
figurines.
Horses.
Yeah.
They're still somewhere in a box in a storage unit somewhere.
Oh.
Like literally like 20 of them.
Cool.
Yeah. And I got like, I don't even know. I got like maybe 2 a year tops. So I collected them for a long span of time.
I collected a more sophisticated toy horse.
Oh, burn.
Called My Little Pony.
Oh. Yeah, sure. Okay.
Oh, it was a joke.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sick burn on Briar horses.
Yeah.
We totally played with My Little Pony at my grandma's house. And it was all, we played, like when my cousin and I were like at my grandparents' house for like Christmas or Thanksgiving or Easter or whatever holiday it was. We would play with Barbies and My Little Ponies, but they had been like my mom's and my aunt's growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like vintage My Little Ponies.
I didn't know there was such a thing.
I mean, they look the same as the new ones.
Okay.
I mean, My Little Pony is My Little Pony.
Like, when did it start? Like, I was alive in the 80s. Like, 80s. When did My Little Pony happen? Are you telling
me
there was a 1960s My Little Pony?
My mom is not that old.
Okay.
Like a 70s.
I am one year older than Megan's mom.
Like a 70s My Little Pony.
Okay, I'll look it up. Tell everybody what's on the show this
week. Hey, everybody. On the show this week, while Maria is looking up My Little Pony info, we are going to have an interview with Nate Holt of Walking the Plains and now Entered the Battlefield, which is a feature-length magic documentary coming out in just a week's time. It will be playing on Twitch following the Pro Tour and then streaming on Netflix and YouTube. We're going to talk with him all about what that process was like and also less serious things than that.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, if you've ever been curious about what it's like to make a movie, you know, or make a documentary or talk to a bunch of magic players, it's a good insight on making a film.
It's
so
great. And Nate is wonderful.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
He's delightful.
I have an update on the pony issue.
Okay,
first of all,
me.
It's very accurate that we're talking about My Little Pony on the show because guess who owns the trademark to My Little Pony?
Is it Hasbro?
Yes. Second of
all, we're on brand.
My Little Pony, the very first My Little Pony toy was introduced in 1981.
And
then the rest came out in like 1983.
Holy cow. Yeah. I bet you, I bet you it was my mom's youngest sister's stuff then.
Oh, yeah.
Because my mom was the third of six.
Oh, so the predecessor to My Little Pony was My Pretty Pony, a pony figure introduced in 1981. Oh my god!
I think but we had that era stuff.
Yeah,
like it was you know.
Wow, this is a real deep hole because the original line of My Little Pony began with the Earth Ponies in 1982.
What?
Wow, the Earth Ponies.
I want to see some of the photos of these so I can identify which ones we had because I bet you if I saw them, we played with them constantly, and we also had Hot Wheels. We had a huge box full of old Hot Wheels. So it was My Little Ponies, Barbies, and Hot Wheels.
Oh, I'm looking at the picture of My Pretty Pony. I definitely recognize it. So I can see how My Little Pony came out of My Pretty Pony.
Okay, I didn't have the one that looks like a realistic horse. We didn't have that one, but that pink one.
Yeah.
Yeah, we definitely had that pink one.
Wow. We've come a long way.
I know.
Nowadays, they like have more shapely thighs.
Come on. I mean,
sometimes I'm like,
for a pony.
Yeah, for a pony.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
We're also going to talk a little bit about Shadows Over Innistrad Limited.
That's right. On this show. This weekend was the MTGO pre-release.
Yeah.
And oh boy, did I play some Magic Online.
Oh yeah, we did. And also GP Barcelona,
mm-hmm.
which was really fun to watch because it had a lot of pro players who were in the yep. area for Pro Tour Madrid coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. It was pretty sweet.
Yeah, so we'll talk a little bit about that. Yeah, it was a fun event, and we logged a lot of hours on the old computer.
Oh boy.
Oh boy. Of course, remember that you can support us on Patreon.com if you like the show. That's Patreon.com/MTAcast. You can support the show for as little as $1 an episode or as much as 10.
Absolutely. You can also go to our website, MagicTheAmaturing.com, where we have both t-shirts and playmats available for purchase with our sweet good luck high five logo on them.
Yeah, they're really cute, you guys.
Yeah. If you want to get in contact with us, you can find us at MTAcast on Twitter, or at magictheamaturing@gmail.com.
We have a Facebook group too, facebook.com/MTAcast.
Absolutely. And I want to
mention something about Patreon, which we don't talk about enough about, is that if you're a patron, you get access to special content
yes.
that people who aren't don't. Every episode, we record 5 minutes of extra banter between Megan and I.
Exactly. We talk about stuff that is not magic.
Yeah.
It's all just, like, random stuff.
It's really fun. Yeah.
I agree.
And so if you want to get access to that, unlock it. You can unlock it at any level starting at $1. So go over to patreon.com/MTAcast. We'd love to have you enter our patron family, and it really helps support the show. We work really hard to bring you good magic content, and the more support we have, the more we can bring you. That's just how it works in the world. So thank you so much to everybody who's supported so far, and if you haven't yet, we hope to see you over there one day. We have a very special guest joining us on this episode of Magic the Amateuring. He's a man of esteem,
many talents.
I believe he's been knighted by the queen herself.
Yes, he is renowned throughout the multiverse.
Oh, indeed. Well, that's for sure.
Known to some only as the wizard.
Yeah. Known to others simply as that really tall guy who plays Mad B-Ball.
His name is also sometimes Nathan Holt. I said full name.
I said Nate.
Oh, that was a lovely introduction.
You're
you
welcome.
Made me sound a lot cooler than I think I am. I'll take it. It's filling me with self-esteem.
Yeah, we want to have Nate on the show this week because his new documentary that you are the co-producer, co-creator, what do you want to call yourself?
I don't know. Yeah, co-producer. Yeah, that's fine. Director, writer, producer. We Sean and I do pretty much everything. Except for a couple things, so we made this documentary. We made it.
Co-maker.
He is one half
maker.
Of
yes,
the entire documentary film crew.
Mm.
Yes, of Enter the Battlefield, a new magic documentary. We talked about it a little bit last week on the show because we were so excited. Everybody's really excited about it because, I don't know, I saw the trailer for it. It mm-hmm. looks really good. Mm-hmm. Nate has a good brain inside his head. Magic is a cool thing to talk about and to have a documentary about. Your film's got a lot of things
what?
Going for
magic
it, is what
is
I'm
not
saying.
A cool thing to talk about. Who would talk about magic?
Magic is sweet. Magic's really cool. Well, you know, it was kind of a dream job for sure. It's like, this is, wow, this is really it. We're making a movie about magic. Magic is really cool. Been playing it since I was a little kid, and we all, like, nerd out about it all the time, and, like, I just, like, am back to cracking packs. Like, I thought I was trying to give that up for many years, and now I'm just, like, cracking packs again. You know? Because I just like magic cards. It's just, like, the addiction. I was in recovery, and now I've relapsed into cracking packs. And so, yeah, we got to make a movie about these, like, magic cards. But it's actually not about the cards. It's about some of the players. Because people, even though I like cracking packs, people are still more interesting than cards. So that's the gist, I guess.
Let's take a quick look at a trailer for Enter the Battlefield.
Magic is kind of the only thing in my life that I ever wanted to be good at, that I ever dedicated my time to, and I just haven't really stopped.
The one thing I guess I would say to people is, my son never loses. He's relentless. He's relentless.
I would want to, like, have a legacy. I was the first female to top 8 a Pro Tour. It was, like, a huge moment in Magic history. And I want to be remembered as that person, and I want, like, other females to be inspired to play or do as well as I did.
Yeah, and I still love playing Magic, and for me, it's like the Hall of Fame is so close. I feel like, you know, one more good Pro Tour finish even could get me back on the ballot, maybe get me in the Hall of Fame.
Wow. Wow. That was great, Nate. Amazing.
That's awesome. I am super excited, as are many people.
I want to know how this came to be. Did you and Sean, who is your kind of partner who you make Walking the Plains with, when did you get this idea into your head that you were going to make, this is a feature-length documentary about Magic players?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's final. It technically is feature-length. I think it's like around 64 minutes or something. It's shorter than we thought it would be when we first set out, but still technically feature-length. But to answer your question, basically Greg Collins, who y'all know,
yeah,
because y'all have worked in some coverage, Greg really wanted to challenge us. And so, you know, we kind of had this preliminary idea of doing kind of like a year-long retrospective of what happened on the Pro Tour. And then that just kind of blossomed in the idea where Sean and I just kind of wanted to take that to another level and just say, why don't we just make a feature-length documentary, since that's practically the same scope of the project, except it wasn't. It was way bigger than we thought it would be. Yeah, and, you know, so we just kind of pig-headedly insisted on just making it this big of a deal. Even, you know, there were some times when we thought maybe it wouldn't work out, maybe it needed to be a series. You know, maybe it would have gotten shut down at a couple times. I don't know how much I can talk about the details of that, but we just kind of pushed through and just made it happen by sheer persistence, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, making any kind of movie is like, I don't know, it's like a relationship from start to finish. Like, you hate it, you think it's the worst thing you ever did, like, halfway through as you're making it, you're like, oh, this is terrible, no one will ever like it, and then at the end you're like, this is amazing.
I feel like we learned a lot about your relationships.
Yeah, exactly.
Just then.
Actually, any good relationship.
I can't think of a relationship that I entered when I was like, this is terrible, this is horrible. Oh, just kidding, it's great. No, that never goes to the opposite.
Well, there's kind of like, you know, like making work of art, it's like you just said, it's like there's the start, you start off thinking like, this is awesome. And then you're like, this is tricky. Oh, this is impossible. Oh, this is going to be a huge failure. And oh, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. And, oh, maybe we can actually do this. And, oh, this is awesome. And it kind of, you know, like, I feel like pretty much anything you put your heart into goes through that, like, U-shaped emotional roller coaster. And this was most definitely that. We might have had a couple different U's, you know, along the way. It was like 2.5 years start to finish. Wow. So, yeah.
So while you were making this, tell us a little bit about how you decided to structure it, because there's so many ways, Magic being like such a multifaceted game and its player base being so multifaceted as well, there's so many ways you could approach it.
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it was something that we wrestled with constantly. You know, the first big choice is we're making a documentary, like, who are the people that we are going to pursue and to follow? And that was like an exhaustive process, you know, and that changed, you know, over the course of pre-production a lot. And then once you have your people, you know, you just shoot a lot of footage with them. You have some idea of how their story might go. Obviously, with the Pro Tour, which is kind of like sports, there's like, you don't know what the ending is. You know, you get to the world championships, we didn't know what was going to happen. We had just been filming this whole time. We're like, okay, well, I hope it has a cool ending, you know. Yeah. And then after what happened, so there's just a lot of like going back after the, you know, the fact, and then finding the story in what you've already shot. It's basically the opposite of scripted filmmaking, where, you know, the story is all written ahead of time. In documentary, it's like finding the story happens like kind of at the end of everything. So just a lot of puzzle pieces, shifting things around. You know, for anybody who is a true Pro Tour nerd, they're going to look and see, like, you know, scenes that are like out of order chronologically and whatnot, and they'll be like, what? That Pro Tour was actually before this other Pro Tour, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, we don't care about that. We just want the audience to actually understand a coherent story. So, it, you know, there'll be times when we had to, like, oh, maybe we should actually put that scene that we shot back in September of 2013 right after this scene that we shot in, you know, October of 2014, et cetera, et cetera. So it was complicated. I don't know. I don't even know how to succinctly answer your question.
So when you were making this, or now at the end, who, like, what's the audience that you have in mind? Are you thinking, like, mostly Magic players are going to watch this? Are you hoping that, like, lots of people who don't know anything at all about Magic are going to watch it?
That's a really good question. The goal from the beginning definitely was to try to at least make it accessible to a non-Magic audience. That said, what I realistically think the film's audience will be is kind of like, can be illustrated by the, like, if you cut the Earth in half and you looked on its insides, right? So there's the core of the Earth, and the core of the Earth here are Magic players, right? So we really hope that Magic players like it. We think they will. We hope they will. We hope that Magic players will, like, rally for it, because if they do, it's like gives the film the best chance to actually introduce Magic to a wider audience than just Magic players. And then there's like all the lava and stuff that's like around the core. I believe it's called the mantle. Could be mistaken. Yes. You got to Wikipedia this.
No, it is.
Yeah. So the, like, all the lava and stuff, we think that is like other gamers, so that, like, people who know what Magic is and they play other games and they're interested in, like, competitions of like niche games and whatnot, whether they be video games or, like, you know, Scrabble nerds or poker players or whatever, that they would be interested in it for that reason. And then there's, like, the crust of the Earth, which is like a thin layer, but it's very important. It's like where all the people live, and all the animals, and like where all the mountains are, and like where the clouds almost touch, and that is like the people who are not gamers and not Magic players, who are just normal people, and they'll probably make up a small percentage of the audience, but a very important part. And yeah, the more that the Magic players and the gamers, you know, talk about the film or share it and whatnot, the better of a chance we have of reaching those people on the outside to kind of show them what Magic is and why we love it so much.
I feel like we forgot a few key layers of the Earth. There's a lot, in that analogy.
Oh, man.
Those are the three layers.
On. There's only three?
Yeah.
Well, no. Well, you, I mean, go ahead.
There's at least dirt. That's at least
dirt?
A layer.
No, dirt's part of the
dirt
crust.
Dirt is part of the crust.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm talking about the under dirt.
Ah.
We did forget the under dirt. No, you're right.
There are sub-layers of dirt. Creepy. Like in Ghostbusters when the street all, like, gets torn up. And then they're like,
yeah,
whoa,
exactly.
Look at all that dirt underneath the street in New York City.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Like,
a lot of people
who are those
forget
people?
About it.
All right, so the cave people as well. We want.
Yeah, the cave,
we want
cave
people.
People.
The film. Yeah.
You want the under dirt, the dwellers of
the
under dirt. The
lizards that live inside the earth.
Yeah.
The lizard people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Miners?
Okay. Yeah, just miners. Mm. The ghosts of miners from years ago.
That's really sad.
Yeah.
Oh, when you said miners, I thought of, like, young teenagers. Like, why do 15-year-olds live underground again? Oh, wait, no. You're talking about...
I mean, I lived underground
miners.
When I was 15. Did you guys not?
Yeah.
Have
you seen The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt? It's a funny show.
Yes. Yeah. So I wanted to know. So this documentary focuses on pro players and people who are on the pro tour and grinding their way to the top. And I wanted to know, what were some of the more interesting interviews or people you got to talk to that we don't usually hear from as a community? Because in the trailer, you have a clip from, I think it's Owen Turtenwald's mom.
Uh-huh.
Is that who it is?
Yeah.
And that was super interesting to me, and I love that. So, like, what surprising stuff can people expect?
So part of what we wanted to do is talk to people outside of just Magic players. And so we did get to meet some family members or some friends from home, and we did some home visits and stuff. So that was an important part because, like, that was our way of going a little deeper than Pro Tour coverage usually goes. What can you expect? I mean, you know, I don't know. They're really cool people, and they love their Magic playing family members, and they understand these Magic players that they love and their family and friends with to varying degrees, some more than other. but you know, I think that there's just a lot of respect there. The Shenhar family is featured. You know, Owen's mom, as you see in the trailer, Owen's two sisters are in it. Reed Duke's boss from his hometown in Sugarloaf, New York, is in it. Who else? You know, just a bunch of people I'm forgetting. But yeah, there's definitely a healthy handful. Chris Pakula's son has a brief appearance, Maddox. Yeah, it's, you know, and I think that's part of what I was getting at before. It's like, by showing the relationship, because I feel like so many people, even if you're not a Magic player, you probably know someone who plays Magic, or, you know, there's like only a couple degrees of Kevin Bacon between most people and a Magic player, you know, and yeah, and just so many people are like, wait, what is that thing that... You know, our friend does. They go to, like, to a store on Friday and they play card. What is that? Is that like Dungeons and Dragons? You know, and oftentimes, like, we just kind of go about it, us Magic players. Like, we don't really... It's hard to explain the appeal of the game to people who don't play it sometimes. So this kind of hopes to, you know, shed some light on that. And obviously the family members part of it is a big part of that, so...
Yeah.
What do you guys think the average person's degree of Kevin Bacon is from a
Magic
player?
That's a really good question. Obviously, it depends.
One.
One in the United States, you know, I would say probably one is on average.
You think,
you know, 1.3
You mean that everyone, one person, like every person at least knows a Magic player?
Not every person. Well, actually...
Every person knows a person who knows a Magic player?
It's an interesting question because, like, if you know more than one person... Is that like half a degree of Kevin Bacon? If you know two people,
you get to go down.
If you know 10 people who play Magic but you don't play, is that point one of a degree?
You're a point one Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, that's probably how it works.
Jeez.
I don't know.
Would say,
no, I honestly think that everybody knows somebody who's a Magic player.
Yeah.
Or if they're not one, they're two. That's what I would think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Also, so
in
if
the
you
US,
know a person who plays Magic,
in the US,
is that a one or is that a zero?
Say again.
If you know someone who plays Magic, is that a one or a zero?
That's...
You're a zero. One person is one.
Yeah, I think it's one degree... One.
Yeah, there's
like,
no...
Like, are you zero? You're zero and
right.
One person out
if
is one?
If you are a Magic player, then it's zero.
Then that's zero.
But if you
depending
don't play
on
Magic
how well you
know
yourself.
Know exactly one person, then that's one degree of Kevin... Does Kevin Bacon even play Magic? Does this whole thing even work? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
I don't know. Let's call him.
Or Kevin Bacon is only one degree away from Magic player, so.
Get out the Bacon phone.
He's from Philadelphia. I could probably find a family member of his.
I mean, you're probably one degree from actual Kevin
Bacon. That's
true.
Yeah.
Our bar trivia team for a few years. I don't know if this is child safe, but our bar trivia team name for a while was Kevin Bacon's Coke Party 13th and Pine. I have no idea if that's where he lives. We just wanted a bartender to say that over the microphone.
And everyone's like, let's go!
Let's go!
Yep.
Oh my god.
That's an A+ trivia
that's a
team
great
name.
Team name.
Nice
yeah.
Job.
We were like, yeah, Kevin Bacon's from Philly. Maybe that's real.
What's like the number one thing you were most surprised by when you made this film? Or that you think, like, you learned either about Magic or specific Magic players, like, making it?
Well, it's funny. I feel like Sean and I had a lot of contact with all of the players, you know, beforehand with Walking the Plains and just coverage in general. We obviously learned a lot more about them from the film, but what I would say what we learned the most about was just the gargantuan task of making a feature. Like, we just kind of thought, you know, our Walking the Plains episodes, what, they're like 15, 20 minutes, and like, what, yeah. You know, it's what, an 80-minute movie? I mean, it's, you know, it's like 4 episodes. I mean, you know, it's like, it's just not that at all. It's just not even close to that. It just, every little part affects every little other part, that it kind of just scales exponentially as you move up there. Not to mention what a big part of it was like, you know, I'd never had a lawyer before to, you know, deal with like entertainment law and like these kinds of very official legal situations that we're getting into as we're getting distribution from Hasbro and, you know, Netflix I don't know, just everything seemed more important. And so there was this whole bureaucratic side of it. Not to mention, you know, we got Will Wheaton to do narration.
Yeah,
name drop.
That's great.
Ooh. that was really sweet. But, you know, we're like, Philly is such a DIY town. So, like, I never dealt with SAG before, you know? Like, I don't know, just like, oh, okay, got to deal with the Actors Union paperwork. We had to pay pension dues and stuff like that to SAG so that some old actor can get his teeth worked on because we hired Will Wheaton to spend a few hours with us in the sound studio. You know, like, I don't know. This is just how the world works, I guess. And so it was a huge education. I think if we got another chance to do something like this, we'd be a lot more efficient, just given how much we learned about that whole process. But... so I would say, learning-wise, there was a huge curve there, but it was cool. It was kind of like going to grad school or something. It's kind of how it felt, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now that you've got these mad skills, do you see yourself doing another project of this scope in the future?
I love big projects. I don't know if we would specifically do another magic-based documentary, though I'm certainly not opposed to that. I'm just kind of generally interested in doing big projects for whatever an audience would want to see. So if it turns out that magic players say, oh my god, we gotta have more of these, you know, and there's like a big demand for that, then, you know, I would take that very seriously. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, I've had such artistic wanderlust over the years, like, to just kind of take on random new projects. I mean, I don't know, 6-7 years ago I was like all in on this two-man hip-hop act that I was in, and that was just like, that was it. We were gonna do it, and we were gonna make it, and then, this is like back in like the MySpace era of the internet, just to give you a picture of, you know.
I know, you did a routine from your hip-hop act for me, and it was
wow, I forgot
glorious.
I did that.
Yeah.
Wow, that was late at night after a pro tour.
What?
It was very late at night, and Nate did some sweet raps for me, and I can say
this. I
didn't
even give you a good performance, though.
It was really impressive.
Okay.
It was really impressive.
I'm having hardcore FOMO right now.
Maria performed a 25-minute poem, all in rhymed couplets for us. The cat with the 12 o'clock ears.
Oh, you remember!
These were a very late night situation right here. There may or may not have been alcohol involved.
No, not at all.
It sounds like something that you would do totally sober.
Yeah,
it
we
actually
were
would be.
Stone cold.
I would have been so much better at rapping if I was sober. But,
It totally made me want to look up your rap on YouTube because, like, it was really good.
Yeah. So anyway, you see, like, what a giant gap there is between that and, like, a pretty serious documentary. I mean, like, I kind of joked with you guys before the podcast started that it's like, I just feel like I'm such a goofball, and I'm like, want to do these interviews and just be like, oh, crazy Nate. But like, it's like,
you're so crazy,
it's
Nate.
Like, it's like actually like a really serious, heartfelt thing. And like, I've done drama before, and you know, drama is like really important to me. You know, I wrote a couple dramatic plays that were like really important to me, and this is like, as a dramatic work, I think obviously it's like the biggest project I've been a part of in terms of its distribution and whatnot. And these are like real, you know, these are real people. Like, these aren't just like fictional characters we made up. I mean, this is like Reed and Owen and Melissa and Shahar and Patrick Chapin and stuff. And these people like really fight hard to do well on the Pro Tour and with just a lot of grit and guts. And we asked them to go on camera and to be vulnerable and, you know, to trust us. And that just requires just a ton of courage and, you know, so it's like kind of serious, you know? And so I feel like, you know, it's just so weird for me to just want to be goofy about everything, but at the same time, you know, put forth this work that I think, you know, that I hope, tells like the earnest story of these players. At least, you know, a story of their, it's not, you know, you just get a snapshot of a certain part of their lives. They're obviously, you can't tell the story of a person's life in that short of a time. But, you know, we tried to capture this whole Pro Tour vibe with them. You know, so I don't know. I'm really nervous, as you can tell. You may or may not tell, but I am so nervous about this premiere. You know, we're going to stream it on Twitch on Monday, April 25th. It'd be the very next day after the top 8 of Pro Tour Shadows of Innistrad. And then it'll be on Netflix and YouTube the day after. And just how those 48 hours go, I just don't even know what... I mean, I'll need some kind of Xanax or whatever whatever some person's...
A 48-hour foot massage.
Have you visited a doctor about this situation?
I should go to my doctor and say, what lowers blood pressure the most?
I don't want your base level. Yeah. I want it on the floor.
I need whatever you give to people who are...
Yeah.
You know, really struggling with their blood pressure.
Yeah, like, say if my brain were to explode every single blood vessel, what would you give to that person?
Give me that person's.
It's funny because it's like a different feeling than if you're on stage performing, because the feedback is immediate on what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you can like feed off of that and react.
Yeah.
And when you've created something, you're just like, well, this was created in a moment and now I've birthed it out into the world and like there's nothing I can do. Like I cannot change anything. After it's out there, it's out there.
Mm-hmm.
So you just
happened.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a different kind of scary, you know? I mean, you guys are stage performers, you know, podcast VCast performers, as well. so, you know, I'm sure you've had the nerves, you know, a little bit of, extra adrenaline for certain shows and whatnot, and so, but yeah, it's different, you know. On stage, you're just kind of just riding like a roller coaster, and when it's over, it's over. And with this, it's, you know, kind of, I don't know, giving birth to a baby that stays on the internet forever and haunts you well after you've died, and your grandkids are watching it, and they're saying, "Why did Dad care about Magic the Gathering?" You know. So
I've definitely been haunted by an internet baby before. It was the worst.
Oh no.
So here's what it was. I made a rap. I rewrote the lyrics to what was it? Some rap song. I think Ride With Me by Nelly.
Yeah.
I believe.
Great song.
I agree.
Smoking me on the back of the Benzie.
Why do I feel this way?
Must be the money.
We all,
rewrote the lyrics to that as a protest song, rap.
Wow, like
on
a political
YouTube.
Protest.
Yes, it was.
Against what?
It was when collective bargaining rights were stripped from teachers in Wisconsin.
Oh, wow.
You've told me this story.
Bless your heart.
Yeah.
Bless your heart.
So,
no, seriously, I care about, and now I have a kid, like, public education is like, I get so riled up about it. Like, I'm very likely going to send my son to a kindergarten that has 52 6-year-olds in the same classroom.
Jesus Christ.
Cause that,
wow.
I mean, because we're just going to send him to public school, and that's just what it's like in Philly right now. But yeah, so anyway, bless your heart. But I can understand why you would be.
I had to shut off the comments on it. It was real bad.
You both rewrote a classic and made it political, so.
Yeah.
Two fronts, really.
Yeah,
people could come at you. Two fronts.
The rapping was not good either. Like, I was very white.
Oh, man. Well, did you know that I heard somewhere that their biggest fear other than like death and obesity or something is rapping in public. Something like people are just so deathly afraid of
obesity, yeah. Rapping in public.
Like, yeah. I think public speaking is for sure up there, and if you put rapping on top of that,
yeah. It's crazy.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
It's such a random fear though. It's like you're like walking around about your day and you're just like, what if someone came up and made me rap right now?
You have to sound cool.
Rap for your life, man. Rap for your life.
Yeah.
Oh god, that was a random tangent. Sorry. Yikes.
That's okay. We were talking about baby internet children haunting you forever.
Yeah. I may do one or two more interviews about the film, but I don't think I will get to do them with other improv comedians. So getting sidetracked is kind of it's a nice thing for me. So.
Get all of your metaphors about the layers of the earth and your lyrics to Nelly out right now.
Are you going to roll out a little red carpet and walk down it and then sit in front of your TV?
You know, we actually got to have, now bless Greg Collins for doing this. Like we got to do that a little bit at Worlds this past year.
Tons of people got to see
private sneak preview. We called it the first look. It was really sweet. He and his girlfriend Liz put it all together for us, and I felt very special. And it was cool. Like, the Worlds competitors were there, a bunch of PAX attendees who are Magic fans were there, a bunch of people from Wizards of the Coast were there. So we had our little red carpet, we had like little movie snacks, we got to play like 20 minutes of the film, selected scenes, so we got to have that moment, I think, and now the rest of it is just going to be online and me sitting in front of a laptop nervously watching every comment go by and wondering how seriously I should take it.
It is the internet after all.
It is the internet.
Yeah.
People say mean things about you, we will come after them.
That's right. Cut them.
We will get after them.
That's right. You hear them, yo? These ladies gonna cut you.
You see how scary we are?
Yeah. Look at those glasses.
I've been told I have a very deep voice for a lady, so be afraid. Of me.
Of us.
Of our voices.
I've got 10 knuckles, and you only have one face, sucker.
But you don't punch people with 10 knuckles. You don't punch people with your thumb knuckle.
At least 4 knuckles.
Like 4 knuckles. But you'd have to really get a roll in there. Like you're like rolling your hand.
Yeah.
To like really punch him with your thumb knuckle too.
I mean, it's not like kneading bread. No, it's like...
That's what I assumed punching someone was like, boop, boop, right. Boop, 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 boop.
I'm going to knock you down. I'm going to knead your face like bread.
I'm going to like massage your face like a Swedish massage. It's going to be so fast that it hurts. I'm going to be like, I'm massaging your face, but it's really fast. So it hurts.
Can we please have a show called Empty Threats with Maria, Megan, and Nate? And we just say like the most awkward threats
to... Yeah.
I'm going to pour baking yeast on your flip-flops. Maybe some fungus will start. I don't know. I've never tried it, but start. You want to find out?
I'm going to hide a pin somewhere in your house.
Are you allergic to pet dander? I'm going to get pets and find out.
I'm going to like rub cats on your pillowcase and just watch you through the window as you maybe sneeze. I don't know if you're allergic, but we'll find out.
I'm going to invite your dad over for dinner by himself.
And then I'm not going to show up and he's going to be hungry and alone.
I'm going to find out his favorite sports team and then tell him I love the other team. Be like, yeah, dad, take that. You're not my dad. I don't care.
This show is the best show.
This is
why I agreed to this interview.
Oh my god. Okay. Well, it's premiering on Twitch on Monday, April 25th, followed up on Netflix.
Exactly. So just when you're like, oh my goodness, I can't come down from that rush of watching the Pro Tour, you don't have to stop the rush,
That's
baby.
Right.
You can go to the cocaine party.
Yeah, Kevin Bacon's Coke 13th party, 13th and Pine. We'll be there watching the film. 13th
and Pine.
All night, on a loop.
And if you're not able to catch it that Monday on Twitch, you will be able to catch it on Netflix and YouTube, correct?
That is correct, yeah. Awesome. There might be parts of the world that don't have it on Netflix, because Netflix is regional, and I don't have complete information on which Netflix markets will have it, but I think if you're in the U.S., you'll probably definitely be okay. Probably, I'm just going to guess, most of Europe and other part. I'm not sure. I'm not going to go out on a limb and say
we'll find out.
Yeah. Anyway, it'll be on Watsy's YouTube channel as well, so, yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Awesome.
Thanks for hanging out with us tonight, Nate.
Yeah. Again, I want to apologize for anybody who wants to learn about a dramatic documentary that's like actually tells the serious stories of players' lives and tuned into this to hear me and us just get real goofy with it. But I don't know. This is y'all's cast.
We offer no apologies to those people.
Sorry.
If they want to complain, we'll find them. Yeah. Knead their face like bread.
Coolio.
It sounds like actually being super getting real. It sounds really nice to be my face to be kneaded with like bread.
Yeah, like I've got some like TNJ going on that like
totally
exactly. Like if someone came in there
muscles.
With like
have you ever had your jaw muscles massaged? Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, God. Jesus. Mm. It's like it's a, one of those exquisite pain type things.
Yeah.
Where you're just like
totally. It's like I should stop eating Slim Jims. They're really bad for my jaw.
Shadows over Innistrad Limited!
Hey everybody, as we mentioned beforehand, this was the first weekend that Shadows over Innistrad was on MTGO.
MCGO. It's like MTGO, but every time you win, you get a cube of cheese.
Excellent, excellent. Have you watched The Devil Wears Prada?
Yes.
Okay. You know which part I'm thinking of though, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
If you know which part I'm thinking of, tweet at us.
I would like.
I'm not going to tell you which part it is. You have to know on your own.
I often drop references in this episode that go completely unnoticed until like one person will be like, "I
That's
got it
so
on
right.
Twitter." Boop.
Which I feel bad because what was the one last week that you dropped and someone was like, "Megan didn't even notice it," and I felt bad because I was like, "I love that."
It was Book of Mormon.
Oh, what? What did you say out of Book of Mormon?
I can't remember. Huh. But it was something. It's usually musicals. To be fair.
I believe that.
So we played Magic Online. Got my drone drop of cheese a few times for winning some games. Also lost quite handily, including to a blue-black zombies deck.
Ooh.
Which, you know, milled me out.
That's awesome.
Because they had the enchantment that whenever you sacrifice a clue, your opponent mills three cards.
Yeah.
And I think they were playing three or four of the blue vessel.
Wow.
So, which also mills you.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It was crazy. I'm like, no way can this crappy deck, what's happening?
I got milled by a Startled Awake deck.
Well,
but that just does it all in one big go.
You only need one card for that
exactly.
mill
it's like,
strategy.
Oh, Startled Awake. And I was like, okay, well, I have seven turns to win this game or not.
Yep, exactly.
And the answer was that I didn't.
Yeah, I made a crazy sealed deck that had Avacyn in it and Arlan Cord, so that tells you something about my mana base.
Holy crap. Nice. I also had an Avacyn in a sealed deck, in a league sealed deck. Friday night, I worked until midnight.
Oh, yeah.
And then I got home and I did a pre-release and I was like, I'll just build sealed and like play a round or two.
Uh-huh.
Played a whole five rounds.
Yep, you did.
Ended up going 4-1, which I think was a result of me being so sleep deprived because this was like, I
Tale
think this was a 5-0.
Tale as old as time.
Yeah. But including I won a game where the only spells I cast were an Avacyn and a copy of Angelic Purge. Those were the only spells that I cast that whole game, and I still won it.
Isn't that what you need? I mean, like, Avacyn is disgusting. Like, that card is
so
sick.
Good. So good. And I didn't even have to flip it to win.
Yeah.
Like, the flip is just like, I don't know why I was about to say this.
What?
The Avacyn was like...
Candy?
Candy on a...
Oh no, we've lost her. Candy on a stick? Is that what you're
saying? No, candy on a...
Candy on a sandwich? Is that what you're trying
to say? I was about to say candy on a sandwich.
I'm the one who's on an extreme food diet right now, and you're thinking about candy on a sandwich?
I don't know why. I was about to.
I mean, it was just candy on a sandwich.
That makes no sense. It makes no sense.
Yes, it does. You were trying to say like it was like gravy.
Yeah.
On top of, you know,
like the cherry, mashed potatoes. Like a cherry on top of a sundae.
Candy on a sandwich.
But for some reason, luckily my brain caught it just in time. That was like, that's not a thing.
No, it is now. Every time that I like get some added value out of a deck or a card, and be like, candy on a sandwich.
Candy on a sandwich.
Psh, mic drop.
Anyways, most of the time it was just like if they attacked and I just like blocked with a few things or like flash an Avacyn and then block with a bunch of stuff. And it's just like you can like five
candy on a sandwich.
Somebody. It's just candy on the sandwich, man. Candy on the sandwich. And like Anchia's vigilance.
Yeah, no,
like you go to
it's
attack,
ridiculous.
You go to attack with her and you're just like, wait, this card isn't even fucking tapping right now.
No. I know they wanted to push her and make her cool, but, like, it's... Oof, I don't know, man. Can you, like, beat that?
No, the answer, I think, is no.
Ugh,
like,
very
I have yet
rare.
To beat a resolved Avacyn. And I have yet to have someone beat a resolved Avacyn.
Yeah.
Like, how can you?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's
I mean,
so
you would
good.
Have to be pretty far behind.
Yeah.
Anyway... Yeah, that was, but it was a lot of fun, you know?
But even if you're behind, and they attack with a bunch of stuff, and you can, like, line up some really good blocks.
Yeah.
It's, I honestly don't know.
I've got the day off tomorrow, so I will be continuing my research.
Jealous.
Into Magic Online and Shadows over Innistrad, so I'll be there. I'll be there doing God's
so
work.
So good. So good.
So GP Barcelona happened.
Yes, it sure did.
We caught a little bit of it watching on Twitch.
Yeah.
I love to watch limited Magic coverage, so mm-hmm. thanks to Wizards for providing that. The winner,
great.
Fabrizio Anteri.
Yeah,
so
playing a super aggressive deck.
Yeah, red-white was his winning deck in the top 8 draft, mm-hmm. featuring cards like, that you might not expect,
ooh.
3, Rush of Adrenaline, which is just a red mana.
Target
creature
gets
+2/+1, and gains trample until end of turn jinx.
Nice. And, like, if you weren't watching GP Barcelona, I just highly recommend going and watching, the top 8 quarterfinals, where he played, Brian Bronduin, and, like, in game 3, spoiler alert, like, kills him from 16.
Yep, he did 16.
Where he goes Magmatic Chasm, Rush of Adrenaline
yep.
on his 4 creatures.
He also
and
had
just like,
Uncaged Fury. It yeah. gives Double Strike +1/+1.
It's, I mean, yeah. It's a good... It was pretty cool. It was pretty cool to watch. I lost in the finals of a draft on Saturday to a super aggressive red-black deck that did the same thing.
Yeah.
That just like... it was a little bit different because they would like... My opponent was, like, attacking me, and even, like, killing some creatures. Like, I would play a creature, and they would kill it, and I was like, I didn't think that merited being killed, but whatever. And got me to 8, and I completely stabilized.
Yeah.
I had a sweet, like, green-white human clues deck, where I was, like, I had, like, Tireless Tracker and Oldenwald Mysteries. So it was like, okay, play a land, make a clue, crack the clue, put a counter on my guy, and make a 1/1.
Wow.
And then I had Thalia's Lieutenant, which puts 1/1 counters on all your humans when it enters the battlefield, and then gets counters when a human enters the battlefield. So it's like, I could have like a 10/10 and like a host of 2/2s.
Yes.
It was insane. And I was like, okay, do you know what? I'm now like, I have this, like a couple of giant creatures and a bunch of tiny dudes. Like, I'm doing great. And, like, my opponent can't even attack me anymore. And then all of a sudden, like, boom, Magmatic Chasm attack you for the last 8. And I was just like, and it happened both games 1 and 2. And I was like, no, you're completely correct. Like, there's nothing I can do about this.
Yeah, he didn't take an Aldric in this draft, notably.
Really?
He passed that. But he had good pickups, like Flame Blade Angel.
Quite good.
So,
quite
good. Interesting aggro deck. Yeah, man.
Very cool. Have you tell me about anything that you've drafted so far?
Well, I drafted. What have I drafted? So I played a black white. Like, this seems to be the colors I fall into, but I don't think it's super good. I don't know. Once again, black, white, sort of spirits and kill stuff. And it was very medium, as it has always been for me. And what else did I draft?
Why do you keep falling into black, white?
I don't know.
Stop falling into it.
That's my problem. I'm probably opening, like, a sweet white card and then just being like, oh, well, I'll do this. And then I shouldn't. But no, I haven't drafted anything that I was like, this is really sweet yet.
Yeah.
So hopefully tomorrow will be my day of making a really sweet deck.
I drafted a garbage Rise from the Tides deck.
Megan!
It was really bad. It did not work out.
Why?
I don't even know. It was just like super clunky and not good.
You made 5 zombies off of it once?
I did make 5 zombies off of it once.
That's some value.
I won that game. I lost all the other games that I played with it.
Yeah.
Let's see. Right now I'm playing a Sealed League deck that's red-green. Oh, I do want to point this out, actually, because it has, Vessel of Nascency is the green one,
yes,
correct?
Yes, very good.
And I'm playing it in part because, like, I think that the deck itself, like, the pool is pretty medium, but it has an Arlen Cord in it.
Yeah.
And I'm playing 2 Vessel of Nascency just because, like, it's actually I'm starting to really like the card in Sealed because it lets you see 4 cards off the top of your library.
Yep.
And, like, with 2 of them, I usually get to play 1 on turn 1. Like, a lot of times it's in my opening hand and I get to play a turn 1. And then it's like, great, if I have a turn 2 play, then I'll play my turn 2. But if I don't, then, like, I'll crack it. I'm probably going to get something good from it.
Yep. And you're adding to Delirium.
Exactly. And it just means that so often, like, I've played Arlen in most of my games. And it's not like, oh, lucky, you're, like, drawing Arlen. It's like, I'm digging towards Arlen in my deck all the time. I'm very pro Vessel of Nascency right now.
I'm always digging towards Arlen, even if she's not in my deck. I'm like, oh, God, I've got Arlen in here somewhere. Here.
Maybe someone slipped it into my deck.
Please, Arlen, somewhere. Some interesting things from the GP is just some fun facts. Wizards asked these players. William Jensen was one of our top 8 players, mm-hmm. Hall of Fame 2013. What was the best card in your sealed deck? And he said Griff's Boon.
And do you know what? Every time that card has been played against me, it has been, like, it's very good. To the point where, because it goes into their freaking graveyard, and then they can cast it from their graveyard.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, shit, what am I going to do about that?
Exactly.
Like, it's a problem. Like, you can kill that creature, and they're just going to have another flyer later.
Yep.
And it's a good card.
More love for Duskwatch Recruiter, Farron Villa.
Also a very good
card. He loved that one in his draft deck, which
obviously... Have you played with Duskwatch Recruiter?
No, I haven't.
It is great. It's the one that... It's a 2/2 for 1 and a green that for 2 and a green, you can look at the top 3 cards of your library and put a creature from among them into your hand.
This is the one that you're playing in Band Company?
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. And then it transforms into a 3/3 that says creature spells you cast cost 1 less to cast.
He also said one of his other drafts, the best card was Erdwile Illuminator, cutest card of the set. That's interesting. I think it's a really good card, actually.
Yeah, I agree. Especially in like a clues theme deck.
Yep.
It's pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah, and
good.
One of my drafts, I saw Graphmole come all the way back around and I was like,
what?
Wrong.
Yes.
That card's...
Yeah.
All-star. I mean, we've talked about it before.
In my green-white humans draft, I got a Seasons Past, like, pick 3 or 4.
Yeah.
I was like, people apparently just don't realize that it's, like, 6 mana, draw 5 to 6 cards. Like, it never drew me less than 5 cards
card
out of my
amazing.
Graveyard. It's insane.
I had 2 in my sealed pool.
And it's just, like, it's Lambeau. Just incredible.
Yeah.
And I had a great instance where my opponent and I were both drawing a lot, had a ton of stuff out, and it turned out that, like, I won because you can't mill yourself with Seasons Pass because it goes on the bottom of your library.
Perfect.
It was great.
I wanted to talk about, quickly, a dream I had, and I know that's a sentence nobody likes to hear, like, let me tell you about my dreams!
No, let's hear it.
But this was a magic dream, Megan, and it was kind of one of my, you know, I don't often remember my dreams, so I was like, ooh, I better tell everybody about this. And I just want to say that sometimes people complain about Sealed and about how it's kind of lucky, even though I think that's incorrect. I mean, there's obviously some luck involved, but there's obviously a ton of skill as well.
Agreed.
But some people complain, and I was like, in my dream, I figured out, I solved how to take the luck out of Sealed deck and just make it a better experience for everybody. And the way it goes is you have a bunch of piles of cards around the room and they're like separated by color and by rarity and all that kind of stuff. And then somebody at the front of the room hits a timer and everybody rushes to the piles and takes as many cards as they want from those, you know, pre-made piles. However, there's a limit, like out of pile one, you can only take 4 cards, out of this pile only 1 card because it's the rare pile, and you rush and you grab them and you make a deck.
That is so weird.
Doesn't that sound like the biggest nightmare you've ever heard of?
That sounds like an actual nightmare.
I can't believe my brain was like, don't worry, Maria, I got it. We'll figure out how to make sealed more fair.
I had a nightmare that was basically just my nightmare was getting married.
Accurate.
Yep.
But also, I also invented another part of magic, so I've expanded upon the game.
Okay.
My dream, also, you could not only have cards in your deck, but also clothes for your creatures to wear. Mm-hmm. So they weren't even, like, I told Megan this dream, she's like, you mean you invented equipment? And I was like, no, not really, because they were, like, actual little, like, cloth dresses and like what suits of armor, yeah, like chainmail, and you could put them on your creatures.
So weird.
And they would grant them special abilities. I had my little, you know, armor off to the, yeah, side, and I put it on my guys, and I was like, this is great.
Clothes really sound like the candy on the sandwich.
It really was the candy on the sandwich.
I think part of it is it's just so funny to picture a so sandwich good with some candy.
I'm picturing it as a Jolly Rancher on top of, yeah, like, you know, like turkey and cheese.
Yeah, exactly. Just like a normal sandwich with like a mini Twix in my mind. It's like, yeah, a fun-sized Twix bar.
Oh my god, that's so good. Perfect lunch.
So weird.
Well, everybody, that's our show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks again to, absolutely, Nate Holt for hanging out with us. Again, his movie, Enter the Battlefield, on the 25th. Check, yes, it out on Twitch, 26th on Netflix and YouTube.
Absolutely. That interview was really the candy on the sandwich of this episode.
Yep, you can stop saying it now.
I will never.
If you want to support the show, if it gives you any kind of joy in your life, even the smallest amount, please consider donating on Patreon. Patreon.com/MTAcast. If you throw $1 our way, we'll send a sticker and mail it at your face.
Yeah.
We'll also send the cops after you. We gotta go.
Hey, everybody, gotta go.
That's the end of the show.
Bye.